Docket number 69566, Mayo versus District Court. Good afternoon, or good morning. It's not afternoon yet, it seems like it.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Would you like to retain time for rebuttal?
Yes, 5 minutes, please.
Okay, you got it.
Thank you. May it please the court. Justices, the grand jury system is one of the cornerstones of the American criminal justice system. It is one of the few things that separates us from the sham proceedings of other countries. And when it begins to function as a rubber stamp, and when it's just there to approve whatever charges the prosecutor brings before those fact finders, it loses its importance. One of the key protections of that grand jury system is the requirement under NRS 172.145 subsection 2 that a prosecutor is obligated to present to the grand jurors evidence which tends to explain away the charge of which the district attorney is aware. In this case, the district court's ruling and the district court's unreasonable interpretation of this statute have gutted this key component of our grand jury system. The system has been silently dismantled in the lower court.
I have a question for you. And I looked at the citation. Your opponent argues that you and they both had the same records with respect to, and I may be mispronouncing the disease, moyomoyo. And we have in the record at pages 198 to 199 your office's letter to the district attorney saying we want Markham notice and that your client has not received complete discovery, but asking that certain things be given to the grand jury as exculpatory in your office's assessment. But this medical evidence was not mentioned, and I couldn't tell, given the limits of time, whether or not the record shows that you had the medical records but didn't recognize their significance equally with the DA at the point at which this was going to the grand jury. I don't know that it matters legally, but I want to know that question, the answer to the fact question.
Justice, I'm not in a position to answer that question. I was not counsel of record.
And you don't know what the record shows on it?
I do not know whether our office, at what time our office came in possession of those
records. Yeah, I don't care, absolutely. I just care what the record shows.
And I'm not sure when they came into our possession. I can't tell you definitively when they came into the prosecutor's possession.
Okay.
Because these records came into their possession as the result of a subpoena that was issued by the prosecution on the argument that they were essential to the prosecution of this case. So these records were something that the prosecutor actively sought out and had. Now, I will concede there were hundreds of pages, and I will also concede that only several of those hundreds of pages include exculpatory evidence. However, there is nothing in the statute, there is nothing in the law that says there is a minimum percentage of exculpatory evidence that must be present before it must be presented to the grand jurors. And here is the problem. The way that this statute was interpreted, I actually think this is a very simple issue. And I think it comes down to the district court's interpretation of the word aware, as that word exists in NRS 172.145. This court has always tried to interpret statutes in a way that avoids unreasonable and absurd results. And how can it get more absurd than the result created by this interpretation? Let me give you a hypothetical situation based on the way that it's been interpreted. The district court ruled that unless we can show that the prosecutor not only was in possession of the documents, but read them, comprehended them, understood them, How in the world can this ever be proven by a defense attorney? Do we put the prosecutor on a polygraph? Do we ask for video cameras in the prosecutor's office to watch and see when they read their file?
In this particular case, there's additional evidence by medical experts who believe there was no other explanation for the death other than blunt force trauma.
And that testimony from that expert is what makes the violation in this case so sinister.
Okay.
Because that doctor testified to the grand jury that there was no other possible cause. She told the grand jury that she read and reviewed everything and there was no other possible cause. However, those records show that there was an alternate cause of death that would have explained the injuries suffered by the alleged victim in this case. This isn't a situation where I'm asking for any possible, if the alleged victim had a hangnail or asthma. This is a situation where the alternate cause of death would explain the exact set of injuries that were present at the autopsy. The state had this information in their possession, and the state failed to present it to the grand jury. I'm not sure what else, as a defense attorney, I could present in order to establish this violation. If the court is going to require, as the district court did, that the state be shown to be knowledgeable and comprehending of the information, this statute ceases to exist. It won't bind anyone. The only prosecutor that would be bound by that rule is the perfect angel prosecutor who's going to present everything anyway. A rule that only binds the most angelic people is no rule at all. The only way the rule is effective, the way that the district court interpreted it, is if a prosecutor comes in and admits, yes, I saw that information, yes, I understood it was exculpatory, and yes, I intentionally failed to present it. That is not the only situation that this statute exists to remedy. The problem here is that even though I wasn't present at the grand jury, even though I'm not there to cross-examine, even though I'm not there to present my client's side, the prosecutor presented all of the evidence that supported an inference that my client was guilty and withheld all of the evidence that would point to an alternate result. The grand jurors were deprived of the very information that would allow them to return a different result.
But it does concern me. I mean, the statute's worded in terms of the DA being is aware of evidence that will explain away the charge. So I think the statute, by its words, recognizes that at the grand jury stage, you're getting information and you're procuring the indictment. The case is not yet totally prepared for trial. And it's of concern to me that we would say in your letter, your office's letter, it's not you personally, but let me just use your, it's easier for me to talk about this, but your letter says you ask that the state, you assert the state has an obligation to include that the grand jury be informed that after the alleged incident, Beverly McFarland was in the UMC hospital for 15 days and spent the last few of those days on life support, et cetera, et cetera. So your office is requesting that the grand jury be informed of this information. Now, we're in a situation where the district court found the DA was not aware of the evidence in the sense that it was exculpatory, but it appears that your office had the same thing and also, while you were asking that other evidence be presented, didn't go down that road either. And so I'm trying to look at this on a writ of mandamus and say, was this a clear abuse of discretion such that the district court violated the law in a way that we should intercept it on extraordinary writ relief? And that's a problem for me to just put my issue out there.
I understand, Justice Pickering. As far as whether or not the defense was diligent in the early stages, again, I was not counsel of record.
Yeah, I know
time.
That.
If there's an ineffective assistance claim somewhere down the road, I don't believe that that's what I'm
But that shouldn't regarding. Affect my analysis, is your point. I should be right. equally rigorous regardless.
That's correct. Yeah. I don't think for purposes of the statute and the state's obligation that it makes one bit of difference whether the defense put that information in that letter or not. There's no obligation for the defense to even send that letter. There's no obligation for the defense to request
it. But should we consider that in determining whether this is aware of evidence that will explain away the charge? Should we say what's good for the goose is good for the gander?
Maybe the question is different. the court, which I found odd, made a finding that McFarland suffered from Moyamoya disease and that it could explain away the count of murder.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the court made a finding that this information had some level of importance and was, in fact, exculpatory.
Correct.
Now, I don't know if that finding is accurate in light of reading the record about what the medical experts said, but I don't believe anybody's contesting this finding as an abuse of discretion. So the premise under which we must evaluate this writ, it seems, is that this was exculpatory evidence that would have explained away the count of murder in the possession of the state.
I fully agree, Justice Hardesty. I fully agree. I think that it's established that it was in their possession, and it is established by way of the district court's ruling that it was exculpatory evidence. The only question being, was the state aware within the meaning of the statute? And this goes to Justice Pickering's question as well. I'm citing United States versus Aggers. This is a United States Supreme Court case from 1976, the year I was born. If evidence highly probative of innocence is in the prosecutor's file, he should be presumed to recognize its significance, even if he has actually overlooked it. The courts have presumed or have charged the state with constructive knowledge of evidence in their files for 40 years. It is not unreasonable to charge the state with that constructive knowledge.
Is that a grand jury stage case?
That is not. That case is in the context of a Brady violation.
Yeah.
However, I would point out that if it is fair to charge the state with knowledge of evidence in their file in that circumstance, it is just as fair to charge them with knowledge of evidence in their file in the grand jury context. I don't see a rational reason why awareness should be different for grand jury purposes than it is for Brady purposes. The United States versus Kipp, 990 Federal Supplement 102. It is now axiomatic that the prosecutor has an affirmative duty to volunteer evidence that arguably falls within the scope of Brady and, in fact, is presumed to have knowledge of the contents of his files, such that claims that exculpatory evidence was overlooked will not be tolerated. And the reason for this rule is because it is so unfair to me and my clients to expect to be proven the mental state of the prosecutor, to expect to prove his level of knowledge, to expect to prove his level of comprehension. It is not possible. And that is why, historically, a violation of this statute has required two things: that there be evidence that is exculpatory, and that it be shown to be in the state's possession at the time of the grand jury proceeding. I've shown those two things.
Let me ask you this in that regard. And there's a potential conflict. Maybe there isn't, that perhaps you can clear up. In one part of the district court statement, she indicates that while this is exculpatory evidence, potentially exculpatory evidence, but then you go on to read, looking at transcript of the hearing on page 9. The state's believe in, it's on line 3, the state has provided what I believe to be, in the facts and circumstances of this case, I believe to be shown that the state did not have knowledge that Moyamoya disease existed or that it withheld that evidence. In fact, the representations made by counsel were that it did inquire of the doctor, and the doctor believed Moyamoya disease had nothing to do with the brain hemorrhage. At the end of the day, it's telling to this court that it wasn't even necessarily clear to the defense until much later in the process that this is something that could or would potentially explain away the circumstances. Is that inconsistent with what was indicated previously?
I don't
think and contained in the order.
I don't believe so. I don't believe it's inconsistent. I believe that the court drew a distinction between the fact that she may possibly have Moyamoya, which she held to be exculpatory evidence, the fact that the notation in the medical record said that she could have had this disease and that could have caused her death. That fact was found to be exculpatory. Whether or not the state had established that she definitively was diagnosed with Moyamoya disease, that had not been done.
I don't think that's standard either.
Well, and I think the court specifically found that she didn't have to find that Ms. McFarlane actually had the disease in order to grant the petition. And as far, again, on lines 11 through 15 that Justice Perry-Gary quoted, again, this has to do with whether or not the defense noticed and told the state about the information. And again, I would point out that there is no reciprocal obligation in NRS 172145 for the defense to point this information out in order for the state to have the obligation to present it.
Let me ask you this. You also had an obligation, I'm sure at this point, to look through everything that was contained in the defense's file, correct?
I'm sorry?
Or at least you had an opportunity to look at the material contained in the defense's file at this point or not?
Yes, I've had an opportunity to read my file, yes.
No, I mean at the time.
At the time,
I understand it wasn't you.
I don't know at what time the medical records came into the defense's possession. I know what time they came into the possession of the state because they issued a subpoena for them.
Got it.
Can I ask one more question, and can we give him a little more time? Because as a matter of policy, on the rule you read to me from in the Augers case, that's in the context of a duty to disclose evidence that to the other side, right?
Correct.
Is there a policy difference between how you articulate that duty in that setting versus how you're going to articulate this statutory duty in the setting of the state's combing through its files and going to the grand jury? In other words, is it appropriate to apply the same test to both settings as a matter of policy? And if you want to think about that and come back on rebuttal, he'll give you time and you can answer.
I'm going to give you two extra minutes.
Well, I can answer now. I believe that it is. I believe that it is the same policy. And I fully understand, Justice Pickering, I fully understand that the state may not have the entire case file at the time of the grand jury. They may have very little.
They may not have thought it all the way through.
But anything that's in their possession, especially records they subpoenaed that they said were essential to the prosecution, anything that they have in their file, they should be charged with knowledge of having read it. Now,
and appreciated its significance.
Correct. Let me give you a hypothetical example. Let's say that the state has 100 pages in their file, a 4-page police report, and 96 pages of people saying that it wasn't the defendant, 96 statements saying that it wasn't the guy. The prosecutor could read the 4-page police report, go put on a grand jury and get an indictment, never look at the other 96 pages, and district court would have affirmed that grand jury proceeding under her interpretation. That is the problem.
Yeah, and I guess the only thing I was wondering when I read the statute is it says, is aware that will explain away the charge. That's the language, and it's pretty absolute. So to me, your 96-page example, that would be a clear violation. But I agree with you. It's hard to draw the line there.
I think it's just as clear here.
Yeah, okay.
Well, and it seems to me that it's almost a strict liability instance. Had the legislature chosen to use anything in the possession of the state, whether they're aware or whether they're not aware, that's a little bit more accurate than, if they're charged with knowledge of everything contained in the file, why do we have to even analyze the word aware in the sense that it means anything?
That has been the rule for 40 years in other contexts. That has been the rule in other contexts. And I would ask, if the rule is going to be that I have to prove knowledge and comprehension, please give me guidance on how to do that. How do I prove that the prosecutor comprehended?
But does aware in this situation have any meaning?
It does have meaning.
What?
Possession.
Possession, okay.
That is
so you would equate aware in the statute with possess?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Silverstein, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Owens, got anything to say?
I do, if I can fit it all in 15 minutes. Let's see.
Actually, I'm going to give you an additional 2 minutes as well.
Thank you. I represent the Clark County District Attorney's Office here to talk about Moyamoya disease, reminiscent somewhat of scurvy that I was discussing not that long ago. It has a similar causation aspect to it here. I don't think this issue that comes before the court really presents a necessity for reaching this issue about awareness and what the prosecutor knew, what he didn't know, what that terminology means. I think it comes down to whether or not these annotations in the medical records about Moyamoya disease, whether that is exculpatory. whether that would explain away the charge. I don't think we even reach the awareness issue.
So what do you do with the findings that Justice Hardesty read to you, though, on this record?
They're wrong. The judge was clearly wrong on finding that there was factual evidence in this record here. They're missing some significant facts. All the medical records say is possibility of moyamoya. They don't describe what moyamoya is. They don't say that moyamoya can cause death in any case, let alone in this case. They don't say that it caused her death here or that it was a superseding cause. They're missing these facts of a causal connection between, I mean, what if it said she had the flu? Now we have to go disprove that that was a cause of her death a week later. Moyamoya disease on its face all alone does not give them the facts of the causal connection that would give us a burden to have now to present something to the grand jury, because it doesn't explain away the brain trauma. Even if she had moyamoya, it doesn't explain the brain trauma. Okay? It might explain hemorrhaging in other parts of the brain, but not in the subdural part of the brain. That's why our neural...
So could you clarify something chronology from a chronological standpoint for me, Mr. Owens?
I'll try.
The portion of page 9 of the transcript creates some incongruity to me from the judge's remarks. She says here that I believe the facts and circumstances of this case to be shown that the state did not have knowledge that the moyamoya disease existed or that it withheld that evidence. Then she says, the judge says, in fact, the representations made by counsel were that it did inquire of the doctor, and the doctor believed moyamoya disease had nothing to do with the brain hemorrhage. Those two statements are inconsistent. Either the state knew of the existence of moyamoya disease and inquired of its experts as to what it meant, or it didn't have knowledge of it at all. Which was it? And when was it?
You know, I don't have that transcript here in front of me. I read it in preparation for writing the argument that you have in the answering.
But would you agree that those are inconsistent? I mean,
my recollection,
if the state didn't know of the disease, that's one thing. But if the state knew of the disease and inquired, and upon inquiry concluded that it didn't cause death or wouldn't cause death, at least based on the records that you're referring to, how is it that the judge arrives at a finding that I referred to earlier? That's why I thought there was something I was missing. I went back and reviewed those medical records too. I had trouble understanding what the basis was for the finding that there was, this would account for, or could explain away the murder, but that's her finding, and that seems inconsistent with this chronology of what the state knew and when it knew it. Kind of important, I think, to the analysis here. You aren't able to shed any light on the chronology of when the state made the inquiry about...
My recollection from that transcript is that our prosecutor at the time said that he had not been aware of the reference to moyamoya disease buried in these hundreds of pages of medical records.
So if he didn't know about it, why would he have inquired of your medical experts as to whether moyamoya would or wouldn't have an impact on cause of death? If you don't know about it, you wouldn't ask about it of your medical expert or anybody else.
Again, I don't have the judge's quote right in front of me, but my recollection is the judge queried the prosecutor at length, and perhaps she misspoke, and it didn't end up in the written findings. I still have issues with her written findings. She uses wrong terminology. It is potentially exculpatory. But I think that the discussion with the prosecutor there in court when this case was argued had to do with the other pre-existing medical conditions that this victim had, such as encephalitis. I can't even pronounce the thing. I've practiced it. Encephalopathy and hypertension and diabetes, all of which were ruled out, including all other medical issues. When a coroner makes a finding that it's a homicide, they are ruling out other natural causes, all other natural diseases.
On page 8 of the transcript, the judge says explicitly, I do find that the fact that the victim may have suffered from moyamoya disease would tend to explain away the charges.
Only?
And then she goes on, and it could account for why the alleged victim had brain hemorrhaging that was essentially reported by the doctors to be apparently 2 to 5 days old when the incident occurred prior to that time frame.
That statement in the transcript could only be based upon the medical articles that the defense attorney attached to their petition. And in the letter to us before we went to the grand jury, he said, make sure you only use the best evidence. Don't get any hearsay in there. We want only good quality evidence. And now he's coming in and using medical articles that aren't specialized to this case to make that establish those facts that aren't in the record otherwise, making this causal connection. How can the judge say that Moya Moya might be a cause of death? It's not in the medical records. It's in the articles he found out there on the Internet.
So this is after the grand jury proceedings and the challenge has already been made to the proceedings.
Yes. And your point is this should go forward to trial and be vetted there. Is that?
Absolutely. This is, if he wants to do something at trial about this and pursue this, I don't think he's ever going to find a medical expert to come in and say that she had Moya Moya or that it causes brain trauma. If he can establish those facts, by all means, present it at trial. There's no evidence we have before us and now that she ever had Moya Moya, that it causes death, and that it was a superseding cause here, and that it can ever cause the brain trauma to the skull, or to the inside of the brain, that is just underneath the skull. That was caused by assault. The neuropathologists, this is what they do for a living, they said this is a clear case of assault. Any expert he's going to be able to find is say, no, it wasn't Moya Moya, it was assault. Everyone's going to agree on that expert-wise. We're talking about semantics here and some reference to Moya Moya that he found buried in a medical record that he's trying to make something out of.
What do you say to his point, though, that how does he prove that the state was aware of this evidence and that it will explain away the charge and the difficulty of proving that? How would you read this statute? How would you have us construe this statute?
Maybe he should come join our office because that's what we do all day, every day. All right? We establish what people knew, what their intent was. The judge here didn't have any problem questioning our prosecutor in court, asking him pointedly, putting him on the spot, what did you know? When did you know it? And our prosecutor was very forthcoming, and it enabled the court to make a factual finding that we did not intentionally withhold anything, that there was no wrongdoing here.
Well, it wasn't a withholding, it was a failure to present, and that, right? I mean, there's no allegation that this evidence was withheld.
We presented evidence of these other diseases that she had, okay? I don't think we even need to do that, because the only evidence that we have in this case is as the cause of death is assault. The coroner ruled out everything. Are we supposed to go down
because of the location of the subdural bleed, he thought that had to be an assault?
Not just subdural bleeding, but trauma, damage to the brain. Subdural cannot be caused by Moya Moya, cannot be caused by hypertension, cannot be caused by any of these pre-existing medical conditions. It just is not going to be a cause of the death because it cannot explain away the element of the charge here, which is causing the death that damages. It doesn't explain that away.
So what would you say, though?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How would you construe the wording of the statute then? 172, 145-2. What is your reading of that statute and how we should interpret it?
Well, in the grand jury context, we have to prove slight or marginal evidence. We don't have to disprove every other inference. We have to establish a reasonable inference of guilt. There may be other inferences out there. If there are facts which would undermine the facts that we are asking them to draw an inference of guilt from, then we have an obligation to present that.
Okay, so you acknowledge this statute imposes that obligation on your office?
Absolutely. And the legislature used the word aware. It didn't say knew or should have known. They said aware because it's a probable cause finding. A reasonable inference of guilt is all we're looking at. They're just looking for it to be as fair as possible. Many grand jury systems don't have that language. We do here in Nevada, and we go overboard. We send a letter to the defense attorney saying, if you've got anything you want us to present, you're not obligated to present evidence for them. But we try to get as informed as we could. Why would we not read our own file and intentionally leave something out when we're sending letters to them saying, anything exculpatory, we're going to the grand jury, you want us to present it, we want to avoid issues just like this that delay the trial, and we're arguing about something that should be presented to a jury. Not in the grand jury context.
Let me ask you a question about whether or not the defendant was substantially prejudiced by the nondisclosure of the Moya-Moya. And what other evidence? It looks like there was quite a bit of evidence that would have supported a finding in any event.
There's absolutely no prejudice, especially in light of our neuro... After the petition was filed, our neuropathologist went back and reexamined the brain specifically for Moya-Moya and said there's no evidence of it. The radiologist was mistaken when he... And he doesn't even diagnose her pre-death, a week before she died. He doesn't even say she had Moya-Moya. He says this is indicative of Moya-Moya or something similar. And the things that are similar that she did, in fact, have is the encephalopathy and the hypertension and the diabetes. Those create similar symptoms. So she never did have Moya-Moya. If we were to go back, what would we present?
And again, what was presented to the grand jury in that regard that was consistent?
That she was a sick woman, that she had pre-existing conditions, that she died as a result of blunt force trauma to the head. She had a vacuum cleaner hit her in the head with it. Her demeanor, her affect changed immediately thereafter. The woman was incoherent, staggering around the apartment immediately after that. Had nothing to do with hypertension or diabetes, which she was managing, perhaps not all that well, but she wasn't in the hospital for those. She got hit in the head with the vacuum cleaner by her abusive husband. That's what caused this particular injury. That's what led to the death. So, no, there's no prejudice. In hindsight, I wouldn't present that. Knowing what I know now, I would not be presenting anything about Moya-Moya. It's a random reference. This woman was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and doctors are trying to figure out what's going on with her. And one radiologist speculated it might be Moya-Moya. That's a very, very rare disease. Only 10% of people even die from it, according to the literature that he attached after the fact.
So, counsel, in your brief, you made a number of arguments as to why the information about Moya-Moya disease contained in the records was not exculpatory. But under Osman, how does this court review that finding of fact made by the judge? It was a finding made by the judge. You're asking us to revisit that finding, basically. It's an abuse of discretion, so... what would be the basis for us revisiting that finding of fact? It's a pretty essential question in this case.
He improperly relied upon the medical articles submitted after the fact that were not part of the prosecutor's file.
Uh-huh.
It's those medical articles are the only facts in this case where she could have gotten this causal connection between Moya-Moya and the cause of death.
Uh-huh.
Absent that, the only thing there is a suggestion by a radiologist that she may have had Moya-Moya, and we don't know what that is.
As opposed to the testimony that was presented that the cause of death was from blunt force trauma.
Homicide, agency of another, that rules out all other diseases. We shouldn't have to go into them and explain why every single one of them is ruled out. Blanket statement, all other natural causes. She had several other medical conditions. Moya-Moya was one among them. They're all ruled out by this one opinion of the expert. I mean, for probable cause purposes, all we ever do is cause of death, manner of death, and that's always sufficient for probable cause purposes, and that's what we have here. Cause of death, blunt force trauma, manner of death, homicide. That puts all their issues to rest. That was adequate. Everything else is cross-examination for trial. It's not evidence which explains away the charge.
Now let me ask you this. If we were to agree with, hypothetically agree with counsel's argument on the non-disclosure of the Moya-Moya and the perhaps a responsibility and obligation for you to disclose that at the grand jury proceeding. Where does the fact that there was additional substantial evidence to support the grand jury's finding come into play? Does that save this case from being reversed or sent back for a new grand jury proceeding?
Well, I don't know anything in that statute that that obligates us to present evidence that would explain away the charge. I don't know anything in there that talks about a remedy. Traditionally, the remedy is, yeah, we have to go back and represent the case. There should be some sort of standard. I can't imagine that every violation of that statute would necessarily require a new presentment of the grand jury, and it certainly doesn't here. But traditionally, if it would have affected the outcome of the grand jury, I guess is a standard that's used, but shouldn't be per se. It's not the only remedy that's available to the courts. The court could have sanctioned the prosecutor and allowed the case to move forward. There's all kinds of remedies. But here, why would we go back and present this? I don't even know if we're not going to just present the medical record about Moya Moya. I'm going to go out and get that radiologist. I'm going to show him the subsequent tests, and he's going to take the stand and say, I was mistaken when I read that that radiograph, and she didn't have Moya Moya. There's nothing new that can be presented to the grand jury. I just go forward with the trial.
Let me ask you this. Does the record show when the Office of the Public Defender was given the medical records that contain the reference to Moya Moya?
It's been a while since I read that transcript. I didn't read it in preparation for argument. I read it in preparation for writing the brief in this case. My recollection was that there was at least a tacit admission during that discussion with the judge where they acknowledged that they had those medical records all along. I can't point you to a place in the record. I'm just going off my memory.
Because your brief says that they did, but the record cite is only to their letter to you asking for other exculpatory evidence.
Well, and their letter to us reveals that they had some sort of medical records.
Yeah.
But I thought there was also something during the discussion with the judge where, and I thought that was one of the findings she made, maybe not in the written order, but maybe in the transcript, that she had said that they had equal access to these same records and they didn't dawn on them. So I'd ask you to deny the petition, let us go forward and have a trial, and they can develop these facts where they belong in a trial before a jury. Thank you.
Any other questions? No? Nope. Thank you, Mr. Owens. Okay, Mr. Silverstein, you got 2 minutes.
Oh, I reserved 5. Did I use?
You used all up, and then we decided to graciously give you 2 additional minutes.
I will try to be quick. First of all, I feel as though I kind of hamstrung myself by abiding by the rule that we're not supposed to refer to evidence outside the record. I didn't realize that that was going to be so allowed so freely. So allow me to just say, if we're going to refer to evidence outside the record, I would ask you to consider the fact that this woman was very, very sick at the time this happened. She had been to UMC in April of 2011, again in December of 2011, where doctors told her that she had a disease. They didn't know what it was. They couldn't diagnose it. And they warned her, if you leave, you may die. They warned her to get treatment or you may die. This happened about 18 months before she passed away. So if we're going to talk about evidence outside the record, I think we should talk about all of it. Mr. Owens conceded just now that the Moya Moya disease might explain the brain hemorrhaging that was found in this woman. I'm not arguing that if someone dies as a result of a gunshot, that the state has to present evidence that they had a hangnail. I'm not asking that you require that if someone dies from a stabbing, that we need to present evidence that they had the common cold. But when you have a medical condition, there is evidence of a medical condition that would have caused the same findings to this woman's brain that the alleged cause of death would have also caused. The district court was absolutely right to say that this evidence could have explained away the charge, because if the grand jury believed that Ms. McFarlane died as a result of Moya Moya disease or any other pre-existing condition, Mr. Mayo is not guilty of murder and there is no indictment because there is no crime. The way that Mr. Owens wants this statute to be interpreted will encourage ignorance on the part of prosecutors. It will encourage willful ignorance, because the prosecutor who doesn't read their file before grand jury will be in a better position than the prosecutor who reads the entire thing.
Can you clarify something, Mr. Silverstein? From I had asked the same question of Mr. Owens. He didn't have a recollection of the chronological order of this. But it is concerning to me that the judge would say, on the one hand, that the state did not have knowledge that the Moya Moya disease existed. I'm assuming that her statement, and then she goes on to say, or that it withheld evidence. But then she says, in fact, the representations made by counsel were that it did inquire of the doctor, and the doctor believed Moya Moya disease had nothing to do with the brain hemorrhage. If you didn't know about it, why would you ask the doctor about it? So it inferred to me that the inquiry of the physician occurred after the grand jury proceeding, when this came up. Do you know the chronology of when the state investigated this with the doctor?
I can tell the court that at some point after I was assigned to the case, I met with the prosecutor and I presented the Moya Moya information to him just me and him in his office. It was at some point after that meeting that he went back to Dr. Greco and talked to Dr. Greco about what I had said to him.
This is after the grand jury proceeding?
After the grand jury. However, I do not know whether this prosecutor discussed the Moyamoya notation with Dr. Greco before the grand jury also. That I don't know. But I do know that he spoke with her after, on my urging.
And I think I'd forgotten, you may have answered Justice Pickering's question earlier as to, and I know you weren't counsel at the proceeding stage, grand jury proceeding stage, but possession of the same material or any material that would have indicated Moyamoya, do you have any idea, do you have any recollection, do you have any knowledge that your office was in possession of that material?
I have no idea what prior counsel had or reviewed.
Okay. But you provided it to the district attorney's office after the proceedings.
That's correct. There were additional medical records from April of 2011 that we sought and got on our own. The records that are at issue in this case were from August of 2012.
Okay.
So there was a separate set of medical records that I obtained through a separate subpoena.
After the proceeding.
Correct.
So something that you had caused you to search for additional records, and that would have been prior to the proceedings or at the time of the proceedings.
It would have been after the grand jury, but well before it was argued in district court.
So it's possible. Well, I'm not going to go there.
I have one further question, Chief.
Yes.
The state asks us to disregard the finding by the district judge that the presence of Moyamoya disease could explain the murder count. And they have cited five reasons why that finding was an abuse of discretion. I'd like to hear your response as to why the judge's findings are not an abuse of discretion.
There have been many times that I've been here asking this court to do that very thing, to disregard a trial court's ruling because I disagreed with it. There have been many times I've asked for that, and many times it's been rejected because this court has been very clear that the findings, factual findings by the district court, are entitled to great deference. I don't see any reason to discard with that principle in this case.
All right, colleagues. Nothing else?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.